It's 6:45. Good morning. I'm Anthony Morneau with KRWG News. Researchers in Colorado have found more signs of a link between oil and gas activity and congenital heart defects in babies, particularly in rural areas. Houston Public Media's Travis Bubenik reports.
Lisa McKenzie and her team at the Colorado School of Public Health looked at more than 3,300 babies born in Colorado over a recent six-year period.
We're seeing that more children are being born with a congenital heart defect in areas with the highest intensity of oil and gas development than in areas with lower intensities or no oil and gas development.
The researchers already knew about this from previous studies, but this one showed even stronger links than they've seen before. The study notes that air pollutants are tied to birth defects, but it didn't find a particular oil or gas well caused a particular birth defect. McKenzie says this could be an issue in Texas as well, though it's not certain, especially because oil field pollution can vary widely in different parts of the country. Some of McKenzie's other research on health risks from oil and gas has faced pushback from industry and Colorado officials. In Houston, I'm Travis Bubenik.
Let's move on to the Tuesday Health Watch, where we bring you one more reason to try to stay heart healthy: cardiogenic shock. It happens when your heart suddenly can't pump enough blood to your body. It doesn't happen often, but it can be deadly if it's not treated immediately. KERA's Sam Baker talked about cardiogenic shock with Dr. James Park of Texas Health Dallas.
A lot of them are caused by heart attacks, a bad one. There can be other situations, like if somebody had cardiomyopathy where their heart's big and baggy and aren't working well, that those patients could come in with cardiogenic shock. That's more of a chronic condition, just gets worse.
What causes cardiogenic shock to begin with?
The fact that the heart isn't able to do its job usually means that the muscle is damaged or the muscle can't move like it should.
But if it occurs during a heart attack, what specifically signals that cardiogenic shock has occurred?
It's a clue that the clinician, the cardiologist, or the ER staff have to be in tune with, because sometimes it can be missed. Generally, you can have physical exam signs. The patient can appear to be sort of cool to the touch, their extremities particularly. The other big sort of clue is that their overall blood pressure, their systolic blood pressure, the top number, is generally 80 or 90 or lower. So if somebody's hanging around 65, 70 systolic blood pressure, then you know something's bad. And the key part of that is detect that early. There's a very high mortality rate, meaning the number of patients who die, in the realm of like 70%.
My understanding is the survival rates for cardiogenic shock around 50%, but what Texas Health Dallas has been taking part in a national study involving about 170 patients. It's aimed at improving those chances. And the initial findings show a patient's survival rate of 72%?
Yes, and it is done by a mechanical device called LV supports or left ventricle support. And this device is put through the groin, just like you would have to go in there to do the angioplasty for a heart attack patient if the artery is blocked. And the device goes into the left ventricle, and the device called an Impella assists the heart. So it actually sucks the blood from the left ventricle and gets it past the aortic valve to the aorta, where the blood gets into the end organs, like your brain, like your kidneys, you know, like your liver. And it's actually kind of doing the work of the heart.
And there's a second step where you use an algorithm to try to wean patients off medications that can have adverse effects?
So basically, you know, once you put the device in and you fix the patient's arteries and they're doing well, there's an algorithm, specific numbers calculated to kind of show you the power that the heart's putting out. And using that and then using catheters inside the pulmonary artery from the right side of the heart, we're able to detect that the patient's getting better and better. So we have an algorithm of kind of weaning the LV support down to the point of removing it. And really the end game of the whole study is to see how many patients are actually alive when they go home. So how many patients survive? And so far, you know, nationwide, it's kind of running around 70%.
Assuming that a person survives cardiogenic shock, There is the problem, as you mentioned before, the bad heart muscle. So yes. Then do you have to go back and address that?
Some of these patients might have ongoing or permanent damage to their heart muscle. And so there are ways to address that, whether it be continued medical therapy to improve their overall heart function over time, or sometimes necessity to get a device to kind of help their heart function and also to decrease the chance of them getting what we call lethal arrhythmias or ventricular arrhythmias, and so getting things like ICDs and such. Some of them actually leave the hospital with a vest called the life vest to help kind of shock their heart while they're getting evaluated if they need a device like an implantable cardio defibrillator.
In the meantime, is there anything we can do to avoid cardiogenic shock?
I think that just goes back to the normal things that I talk to all my patients about. So eating right, resting, exercising, knowing your cardiac risk factors, being proactive.
Dr. Park, thank you for being with me.